Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic.
Hello, Amy.
Hey, Amy.
For those of you who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances. Am I yelling? I feel like it's reverbing on me. Okay. This will keep distractions. I'm the distraction. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step two. Please join me in welcoming our panel for this evening, David and Diane. I will read the first paragraph on page 44, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible, but to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem.
My name is David Yulian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
I'd like to thank the group of Simple Actions for inviting me out tonight and have me sit up here. I have a sobriety date, February 24th, 2013. I know I'm an alcoholic because I am very proud of that sobriety date. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I sponsor a lot of guys. I took the steps, 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, at 5 months sober, and since then, in the last 4.5 years, I've been busy doing Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of my ability, 100% every day. The reason I am sober today is because I got a God working in my life, a power working in my life, greater than me that I choose to call God, which I found by taking the steps. The reading starts out, and in the preceding chapters, you learn something about alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, and that is very important for me when I get to this program, because I don't know the difference between what an alcoholic is and what a non-alcoholic is. You know, I don't know that there's a normal drinker, heavy drinker, and then a real alcoholic. I thought everybody was able to drink to excess and then stop, because I saw other people stopping. But what I found was, in my own experience, that this does not happen for a guy like me. I've tried on my own accord to stop many times, and obviously to no success, because I wound up in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, what it tells me, the difference between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic is very clear, that the non-alcoholic has not been damaged mentally and bodily to the point where they're able to quit on their own. I have passed this line. I have crossed that point from non-alcoholic to alcoholic. You know, I came in with the idea that, you know, an alcoholic was a Vietnam vet that lived homelessly underneath of a bridge that drank crappy malt liquor out of a brown paper bag, and through reading this book, I found that was not the case at all, obviously. I also thought that an alcoholic had to be a certain age, and all these things. What struck me as what just lit me up when I got here was that it doesn't matter how often or how much I drink, which designates me as an alcoholic. It's what happens when I put that stuff in me. And by definition, this is the definition of an alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or two-part statement, that's the first one. Second part, if when you honestly want to, you can't quit entirely, or when you start drinking, you have little to no control over the amount you take, you are probably an alcoholic. And I sat back with my sponsor and my original sponsor, the guy that took me to the steps and showed me this way. And he asked me that question. He said, "Have you ever tried to stop entirely?" And I said, "Many, many times." He said, "How'd that go?" And I just shrugged it off. And then he asked, "What happens when I start drinking?" And I said, "Well, I find it doggone near impossible to stop drinking." And he said, "Okay, you might want to take a look at that." And I did. I took a good hard look at it. And for the first couple months, I was still fighting it, you know, because I thought that calling myself an alcoholic was, you know, a condemning statement. And I didn't want that. I didn't want another name to hang over my head. But suffering in this program for a couple months, it made me realize that, you know, being an alcoholic and coming around to meetings and talking to guys and gals that had the program of Alcoholics Anonymous working in their life, I found that it wasn't such a bad thing after all. Anyway, so you know the second step wasn't in my experience, it wasn't hard for me. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power head, and this is not an option if you're as alcoholic as I am. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. But where and how are we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. And, you know, I was brought into the program as very, very, very into the big book. I've read the recovery portion many, many times. That's not saying that I know everything or anything about AA. It's just telling you where my AA lineage comes from. But as a result of me reading through this chapter and the first 57 pages, it really let me know that I got something going on here that I'm not able to overcome by myself, which I abundantly proved in my drinking career, but I never took a good look at it, you know? Anyway, I'll shut up for that.
My name is Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Awkward, Mike. Okay. I came back into the rooms. Let me start by saying I didn't stay in here my first time coming in. You don't have to go back out if you don't want to. You can just stay and work the steps and, you know, have a better life and all that good stuff. But I'm hard-headed, so I chose to go back out. Well, you know, however that goes, my alcoholism was doing push-ups and I was doing nothing, whatever phrase you want to put there. When I came back in, it was July 5th, 2015. Since then, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. I was blessed enough to have the sponsor that was trying to sponsor me the first time pick up the phone when I called her. And just looking at step two off back, to me, that was the first spiritual experience. I mean, at that point, I hadn't talked to her for, 9 months? And she picked up the phone, like we were talking every day, like we were just hanging out, and you know, I was still around the rooms and everything. So that just kind of floored me, you know, because most people, if you don't talk to them for 9 months, I don't think they're gonna pick up the phone. But I wouldn't, but you know, that's just me. The part that sticks out to me, honestly, in this reading, David really covered most of it, so I can just jump down to that fourth little paragraph you read there. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. And that's pretty much where I was at. When I first came in, I was 23. And I had been trying to stop drinking on my own already for like 1.5, 2 years. Mind you, this is supposed to be like the glory days. You know, I'm in college and, you know, whatever, and I'm partying. And, you know, I would just go to parties because that was just what I was supposed to do. A lot of my drinking was wrapped up just in my lifestyle choices. I'll say that since we're recording. But, yeah, it was just wrapped up in my lifestyle choices. But just having that, it's like drinking was what you were supposed to do. And when I first started drinking, I was in college. I didn't grow up that way. I grew up with every type of moral conviction you could think of. I was raised Baptist in this area, you know, very Bible preaching church and Bible teaching home and, you know, Bible believing, baptizing choir. I did the choir. I was in every youth organization you could think of, honor roll student, you know, always being called on to do things like that in the area. I was just kind of like the poster child at my church. So if I didn't feel morally convicted, I had other people that felt like I was just this good, wholesome Christian young lady. And, you know, it was just, you know, that coming out like that isn't really a, that's not really accepted in that type of setting. So I hid it. You know, I hid my sexuality for a lot of high school. I really battled with it because I felt like it's just not right. You know, and it wasn't even my parents, you know, freaking out when I first told them at 15 that I think I like girls, but they thought I was sick. And then they were like, oh, you're gonna go to hell. And then, you know, the Bible says, and I'm waking up to my mom anointing me with oil. And it's just like, okay, like this is just not, you know, this is not okay. You know, I've clearly crossed the line here, you know, in my household, and I don't feel welcome. I didn't feel that warmth that I felt, you know, prior to that point in my life. And I was looking for that. And that's just important to my story because when I first started drinking, that was the reason why I was looking for that family feeling again. I came to alcohol looking for something. I was looking for a solution when I picked it up. So, you know, I didn't know that was spiritual in nature. I'm just 18 years old, just trying to, you know, not feel like a freak in my own skin all the time. And it worked. It worked at first. It did. It was just like, wow, okay, I'm settled. I'm cool. You know, I would still go to church at first. You know, I would cut it off at a certain time. You know, things like that. And then, you know, after that first week of being a good girl while drinking, it was just kind of like off to the races from there. I wouldn't go home, not go to church. I wasn't going to class. Mind you, I was on a full scholarship at that time. They politely took that back, as they should have. But, you know, it was just a lot. It was just a lot. And all the while, I was thinking, you know, maybe something's not right, you know. And again, you know, after what, around like 2021, I'm like, maybe it is the girls. Maybe this lifestyle is just changing all of me. You know, maybe I should start going to class. You know, maybe I should just chill out and, you know, try to work harder in my field of choice. I was going to school for mass communications at the time. And I just did a whole 180. You know, I literally went from, you know, the Diana everybody was accustomed to seeing to a whole nother person, and I had an afro, and it was just a lot going on. I switched everything about me. I literally changed everything about me but the drinking. And that's another pivotal smack in my face, because again, I'm going back to church. I'm doing the things that I was taught. I was in the cotillion, you know, I mean, that's how I was raised, you know. And then I go to school and I want to be like this hard thug person or whatever. It wasn't working. No one believed that. I thought they did, but no one bought that. But it's just like, man, it just was not, that still wasn't enough. So when after that, after all of that and going through that, of course, as you can imagine, the embarrassment and that humiliation just from that experience alone, it's like, okay, well, now all I got left really is the drinking, you know, because half my friends don't talk to me anymore because they think, again, I'm a freak, I'm confused. so I'm just like, all right, so here we go with the bottle, you know, full throttle, and I'm in it. And from that point is when I tried to stop for about a year and a half to 2 years, you know. So that just gives you a rough outline of where I was at. During that time, I did have a lot of conflictions with God. I felt like me and my higher power were here. You know, I felt like we were both spiritual beings. If I'm a spiritual being, I'm just in a fleshy shell and you're out there. So, you know, we're here. Like, I can just talk to you. I don't need to get on my knees and pray. I don't need to. What's prayer? Prayer is just communicating with my higher power. I can walk down the street and pray. And, you know, just very arrogant about it. And I had no idea that that's how it was. I was thinking I was the most humble person out here, you know. And not to say that I was a terrible person. I don't want to sound like I'm bashing myself, but I'm just cutting to the point. Just at the lower half, what was going on the inside of me, not the front that I put out for everyone else to see, because that's what I did all my life, was put out an image. I was taught to create a picture and to sell that image. My family looks a certain way, we do certain things, we don't do certain things, and how dare you try to even think like that, let alone act it out. You know, that's how I grew up. So it's a lot of convictions, a lot of moral and philosophical and, you know, metaphysical. It's just a lot. I had all of these structures and boxes and guidelines for myself. And while I was drinking, especially, I say from, you know, that 21 to 22 age to when I first came in the rooms, it was bad. It was bad because every conviction I ever had, I just threw out the window. And it just did not, it didn't matter. You know, it didn't matter. And when I can't hold myself to my own standards, that's bad. That makes me feel kind of crappy. You know, I think that's that incomprehensible demoralization. You know, that's how I feel about it when it says that in the text, too. It's just, I can't even hold my own self accountable. I don't even trust me. You know, sometimes I still don't trust myself. And I've been sober for like 2.5 years, but it's just still kind of difficult sometimes because I know, you know, the freedoms that I'm experiencing today, thank God, from, you know, working the program. But, you know, Lord, I'm free to mess it up, too. You know, and that's just, sometimes it's just where I'm at, and I just gotta sit and just like, okay, like, let me just calm down, you know. But that was really, that lack of power and those moral convictions, that whole first part, I mean, I could talk about that the whole time, but I won't. But yeah, that did it for me, you know. When I just looked at myself and I said, I want to stop, but I can't. I'm trying to stop, but I can't. I don't know how, but I'm gonna keep trying everything in my power to do so. And I just keep going on this hamster wheel to nowhere. That was one of the things that led to me thinking that I might really have a problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Diane. We're gonna continue the reading on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
Yeah, step two is, like I said, this is my experience. The only experience that I'm allowed to share up here is my own. That being said, I share some of the same background that Diane was talking about. You know, the things that I should do, the things that I shouldn't do, you know, the price I'll pay for doing the things I shouldn't do. And I was just an ordinary little boy. I did all the things that I shouldn't do. But, you know, being raised in the church, I had stuff forced down my throat, I felt at the time. You know, the older I get, I realize that my parents were just doing for me what they thought was the best thing to do. And it was until I was started being able to make my own decisions and do what I wanted to do. Step two is an idea. Do I now believe that my life sucks bad enough that I will take into consideration a power greater than myself that will be able to help me? And it's all about willingness for me. Willingness to get busy doing something, the only thing I've never tried to get into stay sober. I've tried all other avenues and failed horribly at them. And like I said, it's just an idea. One, two, and three are all ideas for me. That's all I have to do is I have to be willing to put myself in a position that I'm okay with making a decision. And I wanted to get sober I tried to stop drinking without this program for the better part of 10 years. The only thing in my way was myself. I was the only thing standing in my way the entire time because I'm such a hard-headed little turd. It says, we discovered we did not need to consider others' conception of God, and this was huge when that man told me that I could choose my own conception, however inadequate it was at the time. And like Diane was talking about, I was raised in the church. I was a preacher's kid of a United Methodist pastor. From the time I was 7 days old till I was 14, I missed 10 days of church. And that is on record. You can ask the preacher. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all, you know, when I was a kid doing all them things. And it was fun. But then once I found other things that I started liking, enjoying, grew up a little bit, you know, I didn't like it too much. I didn't like being told that I had to do this and I had to do that and I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And so I veered off course about 180 degrees. And through years and years and years of alcoholism and trying to stop and not being able to and trying to stop and not being able to and trying to stop and not being able to, I come to this program and I hear the G-O-D word and I was frightened. To say the very least, frightened. Because all I want to do is stop. I just want you to tell me how to turn it off. I don't want to talk about G-O-D. I don't even want to say it. And I sat down with the man, and we were reading to this book, and I kind of started cringing. I'm sure he knew that I was starting to tense up a little bit. Like I wanted to get up and run out the house. And he said, listen, man. You come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you come here to ask for help. We're not gonna force nothing down your throat. If you want to stay, you can stay. If you want to believe, you can believe. If you don't, the door's right there. You can leave right now. How bad is it? And I sat right there, and I'm still here, very close to 5 years later. The pain was bad enough that I was willing to believe that anything could help. The conception of God. Now, this is burned in the back of my retinas when I close my eyes. When I close my eyes and I think about God, I think of the picture. The long brown hair and the thorns around the head and the mountains in the background. I cannot get rid of that no matter how hard I try. But what I use today is very, very, very simple. I never understood I am not taking anything away from those who believe in the Christian life. It does not work for me. I go to church on Christmas and Easter because that's what my parents expect. But other than that, I stay far, far away. I'm a spiritual man. The most spiritual man I know. Anyway, so I was told, I didn't know, I was asked what I knew about God when I got here. And I stood in front of that man for every bit of 60 seconds. It felt like an eternity. And I'm trying to figure out what I know about God. And I'm a preacher's kid. I should know a lot. I was baptized. I was confirmed. I was an acolyte. I was in the choir. I went to vacation Bible school. I went to church camp. And I sat in front of that man and I didn't know nothing. Nothing. I knew a couple names. I don't even know any Bible verses. It had all left me because I jammed it out of my head. And I sat in front of that man and I said, well, I know that I used to put my penny loafers on and my corduroys and go to church. Because that's what we used to wear back in the 80s, was corduroys and penny loafers. And he sat there and he looked at me and he laughed and he said, putting your fancy clothes on, going to church doesn't make you a Christian any more than going into McDonald's makes you a cheeseburger. And I lost it. You know, here I was thinking that, oh, you know, I'm a preacher's kid and I'm special and this and that and the other, but I'm not doing anything spiritual when I was a kid, nothing. You know, people in my church were going to Ecuador and Belize and Costa Rica on mission trips and doing all kinds of stuff, and you couldn't get me. Mm-mm, nope, that is going to get in the way of my drinking. No siree. But anyway, so I was very confused. And I still to this day, I use his conception. And it was his sponsor's conception and my grand-sponsor's sponsor's conception and on down the line. And it's been passed down from generation to generation of Alcoholics Anonymous. Kind, loving, forgiving, and understanding. That's what I use today as my conception of God. And I can get down with those four words. Kind, loving, forgiving, and understanding. That makes complete sense. He had me. All those years of me trying to figure out what the book, not this book, but the other book that they use on Sunday was talking about, it made no sense to me. I couldn't understand it. But kind, loving, forgiving, and understanding, that I can get down with. It says, to us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, and inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding, to those who earnestly seek Him. Two very important words, earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men and women. And, you know, like I said, I have been doing AA to the best of my ability since I got here. I have a great life, better than I could have ever dreamed when I come through them doors, or before I come to the doors. I'm not perfect. I never will be perfect. Never have been, never will be. And I don't want to be perfect. I like being flawed. It keeps my wife on her toes. But, you know, this, it's a simple program. It's not always easy, but it's very, very simple. You know, I was told in early sobriety, if you never want to drink again or you never want to feel the way you feel, you don't have to. There is a solution. And the man told me, he said, it is easy. It just depends on how willing you are.
Pass. My name's Diane. I'm an alcoholic. I'm used to things, people saying thank you. Thanks for sharing. It's like, okay, I'm cute now to go. But I'll get it. Third time's a charm. Anyway, this part, it really,
I just like that whole chapter that we're reading from right now, because it just really helps me identify, because after all of that obstacle course with just my religious upbringing, I did want to start living spiritually, and I had gotten to that point before I came into AA the first time, which is just, you know, again, like looking back at it, like, man, I was really dense, but just too smart for my own good. I believe more in the knowledge seeking and knowing and learning different paths and different ways, and you know, just having that approach and then coming in for someone that was already supposedly quote unquote thinking that way or believing that way. I was very, very rigidly against all of this when I first came here. The main thing is because before, my so-called spirituality was based off of physical strength versus actual faith, which is something that I've come to cherish and respect, and thank God that I've been granted, you know, a certain measure of faith, I believe, today, just because that's the only way that this works for me. I have to believe that, you know, something is greater than me. I can't be the last stop on my street anymore. When I am the last stop, it's just, you know, the whole street's on fire and that's it. You know, just like, oh, I'm out of options. Like, the only other option is to just end it all. You know, I faced that crossword, crossroads. Baby got me tongue-tied now. I faced that crossroads a couple times. I was actively suicidal growing up. You know, again, not in the little pretty family picture, you know, but, you know, we were dealing with that. You know, I mean, my parents did the best they could, you know, I'm in counseling and everything like that. And, you know, I would pray, and I felt like growing up, I felt like I did have a connection with God, you know, the God that I was taught about, that I was raised on, you know, because I see my parents, they're pretty decent people, you know, people in my church, they're nice. You know, I didn't grow up at a hellish church, you know, it was very friendly, family-oriented church, you know, so it just made me feel like something's wrong with me, you know, because I hadn't developed my own relationship with a power greater than myself, and that's something that I felt like I had. Again, I'm looking at God as the homie, but we're here, we're on the same level, because we're both spiritual beings. Like, I'm gonna keep saying that, because that's all I kept saying every time I went to a meeting, and the first time, or, you know, as soon as you said in step one, you know, we admitted we were powerless. I never said that. I just said that my life sucks. I just said that I can't stop trying to kill myself. I can't stop drinking on my own. I can't seem to, you know, make it to the end of a semester with the grades that I had at midterms, which were a lot better than these four Fs that I'm looking at right now. And I can't seem to actually be happy at all. I just want to be numb, you know, because I drink to excess. I drink to just coast and level out through life. I'm not powerless, though. And like I said, me and God, like, I can't be on the same level as my higher power and be powerless, you know, because we're spiritual beings, we're both here. And that's how I think when I first come in here. So, you know, hearing my sponsor's old school AA, you know, so, you know, think, and, you know, shut up and listen, you know, take the cotton out your ears, put it in your mouth, and, you know, all that stuff like that. That helped me get sober, man. Like, when I actually started listening to it, the first time she just rubbed me all the wrong way, and I was like, no, like, this old lady does not know. It's 2014 right now. Like, she doesn't get it. You know, that worked for you, but I'm not powerless, you know, because all my life I wanted to be strong, you know, so I had to, one, I had to be humbled, you know, and then two, coming back into this program and being willing to actually find a working conception of a power that is actually greater than Diane, you know, not that we're not cool, but we're not on the same level, you know what I mean? Like, I pray every day, you know. One of the things for me is that my sponsor did suggest that I pray on my knees, and I still do that to this day, just because it helps keep me in check. Like, everybody doesn't have to do that. I have friends that have beautiful sobriety and lives, and they don't do that, you know, and that's fine. But I just know that that's what works for me, because I was the person that would purposefully stand up and talk to God, because I'm not praying, because that sounds submissive. I'm not, again, you're not going to take any strength from me, you know, because that's what I'm trying to gain. And I came here trying to find the strength to stop drinking, and you're telling me that I'm weak and powerless and meek, and, oh my God, I'm just, destitute and, you know, doomed and utterly failed. And oh my, it's just like, I'm like, what is this? What is this book? Like, what are y'all talking? This is a cult. Like, y'all are crazy. That's really how I felt my first time around, you know, until I actually hit, you know, what I pray to God is my bottom, you know, and I came back in here. I crawled back in here and I cried my way back in here and I sat there, you know, and I did take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. I did actually start praying on my knees, and it works for me today. I love what Dave said about those, you know, those four attributes of a higher power. Again, you know, that roomy, all-inclusive part, that helped me a lot. You know, just I don't have to depend on my parents' God, which probably still thinks I might go to hell, but because they keep praying every day about it, I'm sure they do in the back of their minds. It's like, you know, maybe they'll let her in the side of the gate. You know, maybe it's a little, you know, I'm just like, it's okay. Like, I'm okay. I don't believe that. I believe that I'm all right. I know for sure that God wouldn't have had me stop drinking if he didn't love me. You know, I believe that my higher power would not have had all 28 of my suicide attempts be unsuccessful if he didn't love me, if I didn't have a reason to be here. And I don't think that he would keep me alive just to have me rotting in hell. So that's my concept of my higher power, is more so what it isn't versus what it is. And, you know, anything good, I believe, comes from my higher power and definitely my sobriety. Thank you.
All right, we're going to pick up on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
They said it. One short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe? It's that simple. It really is that simple. You know, it's not. There's a thousand and one ways to do Alcoholics Anonymous. The way that I've been shown is just one. It's the way that worked for me. It's the way that worked for my sponsor and his sponsor and the guys I sponsor. I'm not the AA police. I'm not here to tell people that they're not doing it the way I do it. No, they're doing it wrong. Mm-mm. You know, it says in the preamble that our primary purpose is to stay sober. However, the way that you find, if it works for you, great. Unfortunately, there are some ways out there that would just not work for me. I need the baseball bat sobriety. I need to be told what to do, how to do, when to do. I need to be called stupid sometimes. And that's just me. You know, I live for 34 years on self-propulsion and self-will, doing what I want, when I want, how I want. I've never been married, except I got married a year and a half ago. Excuse me. I'm glad she's not here right now. She's my first wife. I don't have any children. I'm a carpenter. I never had to answer to anybody. You know, the only time I ever had to follow rules is when I was locked up. Other than that, on the outside, it was a free for all. So when I came here and I heard people telling me that it was going to be okay and just not do this and just not do that, it was just kind of like a laughing stock to me. Because I know it's not going to be okay. Like, I literally almost killed somebody so that way I would go to prison, so that way I would never have to drink again. And you're telling me it's going to be okay? It's not going to be okay. Like, 34 years of my life proves that it is not okay. And so I come here and I'm hostile. And I'm mad. I'm mad that I got to be in this cult. And all these things. And then I sat in the rooms dry for probably a couple weeks or a couple months. Just not doing anything, just going to a bunch of meetings. And I was listening to a speaker. And he was talking about people that just go to a bunch of meetings. and expecting to get better and this and that and the other. And he said, you know, people that go to these guys and gals that come into AA and go to a bunch of meetings and expect to get the same sobriety as guys and gals that come into AA and do Alcoholics Anonymous, that have a smile on their face, they're laughing and they're joyous and they're free and the problem, the obsession of alcohol has been removed and they're helping other drunks. And he said, you know, these characters that come into AA and go to a bunch of meetings and expect to get this just by going to meetings is about as ridiculous as going to a bar and watching somebody on the other side drink and expecting to get drunk. And the light bulb went off, and I was like, man, I got to get busy because I really don't feel too good. And it's a decision. It's one short question. And am I ready to believe or am I willing to believe? And for me, the answer was yes. I came in February 24, 2013, picked up a white chip and haven't had the need or desire to drink again or put anything in my body affecting me from the neck up. This, as soon as a man could say he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is well on his way. It has been repeated. This tells me that history and in the preceding 46 chapters, in addition to that, all the Roman numerals tell me that alcoholics just like me have been recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body for all these years. Time after time after time after time after time. There's a solution. There's a solution. There's a solution. You do A, B, and C, and you get all the rest of it. You get the goods. This delicious apple pie that everybody talks about in here. And all I got to do is make a decision to commit the rest of my life to it. How bad does my life suck? Well enough that I'm willing to make a decision that I have no idea what I'm doing. When my sponsor asked me if I wanted what I have, I had no idea what that meant. He said, are you willing to go to any length? And I have no idea what that means. And he says, read the book. And I'm like, damn, I hate reading. But okay. I don't know what any of this means. Nothing. But I know that my life is in such shambles from alcoholism that I'm willing to do anything. And it was an easy step for me. Very easy.
Thank you, Dave, for passing.
You like that pass?
Yes. All right. I'm not messing with you. We're recording. Okay. So for that, yeah, like I said, first time around, no, I clearly was not willing to believe that, you know, I couldn't figure it out or, you know, beat the game. That's pretty much what it was for me. You know, I'm a very algebraic equation formulated type of person. You know, I'm like, okay, maybe I should just, you know, drink it this time on these days, not before this, okay, during that, okay, maybe I should just try to keep it even throughout the day. No, I should just wait till the evening and then turn up really hard. And so that way I turn up too hard than everybody else. It's just, I went through all of that, you know, all of that crazy, just trying to get it to just be leveled. I just want to level numb through my day, because how dare you keep waking me up, whatever thing in the sky you are. That's how I felt. That's how I felt before I came in here. And that's how I felt when I went back out too. I went right back to that. And just, you know, quickly, you know, I remember hearing when I first came in, the home group that I had at first was my sponsor's home group is the Brambleton group, downtown Norfolk. And it's a whole bunch of old timers. And I mean, you know, 30, 40 plus years of sobriety. And it was just good to see that, you know, it was good to see that, you know, it is repeated and it does work. It's like, okay, well, man, dang, they've been doing it for, you know, 38 years, you know, and she sounded like she was crazy back in the day, you know, so it was just like, I can do it. You know, I think I can at least not drink tonight. You know, I can put something together. You know, when I came back in and I was really serious about working this program, it did give me a lot of hope to see that. I didn't, you know, she had to push me to go to young people's meetings. You know, she was like, you need to make friends in the program your own age, you know, because I don't do the stuff that you do. You know, you need people that you can come up with in the program. And that's how they did it. You know, that's how they did it. You know, they just came up together. And just being at that group, it was just good for me, just the type of person I am. I respect my elders. Like, I need to glean something
that I'm not doing. I can't think on the same level as me, because we can make something real stupid sound like an awesome idea, you know. And it's just, that's just how I am. So it's like, yeah, let's do it, you know. And I'm gonna charge full force, and it's like, nope, that was bad, but whatever. But you know, it was just good for me. And my sponsor, she shared in a meeting one time. That's probably the only thing I remember as far as what someone said my first time in the rooms. And she said that when, because she went back out herself, she was like, you know, if you go back out, you're gonna pick up where you left off, and it's gonna get worse. And you know, I guess that's my, you know, my ominous warning gravestone or whatever. Like, it says in the story, but you know, it just, it, that happened to me. You know, that happened to me, and I went back out and I picked up where I left off, and it just, I mean, astronomical failure. Like from the first sip, it seemed like, I'm like, this is, you can't, you gotta be kidding me. Like, they were right. The stupid old timers at this meeting in this little church that drink their little coffee and talk about their grandkids and how great their life is today, you know, and I'm just young and bulldozing through every structure I could ever possibly put together for myself, and I can't seem to figure it out, because I'm still trying to figure it out, because I like playing God, because it's a challenge, you know, this is a, it's a mystery. How am I going to make this cup not F up my life today? So that's what I used to do, you know. It's like, that's really what it was for me. It's like, I'm a big challenge person. I'm a video gamer. It's like, I'm gonna figure this out. I'm gonna just keep respawning, and one of these lives is gonna work, you know. But unlike the game, I only got this one life, and I got this one body, you know. So after a while, my brain just wasn't putting two and two together anymore, and I had to come back in here and get busy. Like Dave said, and that worked for me. You know, when I was faced with that question, the answer was, heck yeah, you know, let's turn the page. You know, what's next? You know, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? You know, please help me. And that was just something that was necessary for me. I had to be humbled enough to be willing to ask for help. And even today, I was sharing with somebody before the meeting, you know, just how, like, right now, every time I'm asked to do something, it's always like 2 or 3 months in advance. Whenever I'm asked to do anything service work-wise for the program. And it's like, oh, you know, okay, sure, yeah, it's great, you know, because life is good right then. It's like sunshine and everything. Just in the last weekend, I had this crazy event at work. Somebody was trying to cuss me out over the headset at my job, and I had to squash that immediately in a professional way. You know, I didn't stoop to their level, which I do believe is a product of my program. But, you know, like, that happened, like, the night before that, my car, I leave from work late, it's like 10-something at night, and I'm on the way to pick up my girlfriend from the bus stop, and my car breaks down on the interstate on the way to go get her. So she's just there waiting for me, and I'm like, I'm not going to be there because my car won't start, and it's in the shop right now. You know, I don't like not driving. I don't like not having the wheel, because that's the type of control freak that I am, that I didn't know I was until I came into this program and learned more about Diane, who's pretty crazy, but she's not all bad. Like, I'm cool. It's okay. But, you know, it's just that's where I'm at right now. And it's funny, you know, because, like I said, I was asked, what, 2-3 months ago to speak today. I was like, it's like November. Like, y'all are really ahead. Y'all are on it, you know, for February. But every time it's something that pulls me outside of myself. Am I still willing? Am I still willing to do what I need to do? Am I still willing to be helpful to someone else? Am I still willing to share all of this stuff about my past that some of my friends don't even know about me with a room full of people that I only know maybe 20% of y'all? You know what I mean? But I know you because we do have that common bond of finding a solution to a common problem. And that for me, willingness is a very, very big part of my program today. And I just try to remain as willing as I can, because when I'm not willing, I know what happens from my own personal experience. So thank you.
We're going to skip ahead a few pages to page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a satisfying living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
I love the bedevilments. I remember the first time I read them with somebody that had been to this book before. He said, we were having trouble with our personal relationships, and he looked at me, and I was like, I've never had one. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Oh, man. I'd started laughing again, right? And then I would cry, and then I would laugh again, and I would cry. We were prey to misery and depression. I don't think I've ever been the depressive type. Maybe after, you know, after like a, let me give you a for instance, I get paid on Friday. In the construction world, we get paid on Friday, every Friday, not biweekly, every Friday. And I would spend my entire paycheck, Friday night, Saturday night, and then Sunday at some point in time, I would come too, and I would look at my wallet. And I don't know, probably 10,000 times, I had $50 left. No food in my refrigerator, no gas in my truck, had not paid any bills, didn't have no alcohol in the refrigerator, no booze in the cupboard, nothing. That was a pretty depressing time. But I'm very conniving, so I always found ways to get money. And then I just drank it away. But we couldn't make a living. See, this is, I have always made an honest living. I graduated high school in 1996. I got right into carpentry. I went to college for a couple years and also worked on the side. So for 21 years, I've been a full-time carpenter. They got a saying that says, 30 hands clean money. So I've always had clean money. I've never been in anything illegal to try to profit. But I did make a living. I just couldn't barely keep myself alive. I was able to keep animals alive and plants, but barely myself. We had a feeling of uselessness, and I can absolutely, absolutely identify with that. You wake up, go to work, come home, drink, wake up, go to work, come home, drink every single day. It was like Groundhog Day for years and years and years. And it, at some point, I can't remember when it was, but, you know, it was... I would go to work and I would get my I wouldn't say ego, but I would lift myself up, because it's very, very intense work what I do. I was fortunate to get into a beach community for a general contractor back in the 90s, in the late 90s, and we build multi-million dollar homes for very, very, very wealthy clients. And you know, it's nice when you could leave at the end of the day and you know, when you got these people that just made money and they come in and they thank you for your good hard work and this and that and the other. And I'm like, yeah, and then I go home and I do it all over again and I beat myself down. And you know, it's very wearing, very wearing. We were unhappy. We couldn't see to be of real help to other people. Hell, I couldn't be of real help to myself, much less anybody else. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple, I think I've said that word probably 79 times tonight, reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. I believe that the first 11 steps contain 30% of what I need, and the 12th step contains 70% of what I need. That's just me. The first 11 steps allow me to have a working relationship with a God of my understanding. The 12th step allows me to get out of myself, which is imperative for a guy like me. Imperative that I don't think about myself. The more guys I have at this current time, right now, I sponsor 8 men. And sometimes, 6 months ago, I had 15.
And then the next week I'm down to 5. And then the next week I'll be up. And then the next week I'll be down. It's just the rotation of Alcoholics Anonymous. People want help and then they're not willing to do it. And some stick, and you know, some stick around and some others don't. It's not my job to follow men around with anything and make sure that they do this. You know, it's a willingness. How willing are you to do it? The best quality of life I've had in just under five years of being sober is when my phone is nonstop ringing, when I don't have a chance to think about myself. It's amazing. And one of the things that threw me for a loop when I got here, and I'll shut up after this, was, well, you know, what is my family, the non-alcoholics, going to think? You know, my phone's going to ring. Hell, in 4.5 years, I have literally not had an uninterrupted dinner, not one time. My phone is always ringing. And life is great. This is my purpose in life, to help other alcoholics. I'll pass with that.
Well, all of those negative feelings, I think I pretty much covered all of those for myself this evening. But yeah, definitely the uselessness, that's one that stuck out to me the most. I always felt like kind of worthless, honestly. I mean, even just as a child, I just didn't feel like I deserved what I had. I didn't feel like I deserved to live. I mean, the first time I tried to take my life, I was 4 years old. So it's just kind of weird. I don't know what happened. You know, my sponsor's like, did something happen? I'm like, I don't think so. I mean, I don't remember anything else happening around that moment. I just felt like I didn't deserve to live for some reason, you know? So it's just like, you know, those polar extremes and the insanity part of step two, which I can't just bypass that, you know, restore us to sanity. You know, I've heard a lot of people, especially old timers in particular, you know, what does that mean? It means you're crazy. If you need to be restored to something, that means you ain't got it, you know? And that's just something, it makes me laugh, but that's something that I think about, because I definitely know, I know today, if anything, I accept that I'm not, you know, I'm not all the way there, you know, and I don't want to ever have it, especially when it comes to AA. I just want to keep doing the best I can each day. You know, and sometimes it might just be not taking a drink for the day, because everything else is honestly just like, if I think about anything else, it's not going to be good today. It's not going to go well for anybody. You know, I'm trying to keep, you know, I'm just trying to keep settled, you know, not dip into that anger, because it's an indulgence. It's a luxury of normal men and women and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, that's my main vice, is anger, which is funny because I'm actually very calm. But I try to keep it that way just because I like to stay grounded. You know, I don't like to do a whole lot of fluctuating up and down. That just, it makes me crazy. I don't like being around a whole bunch of craziness all the time. Unless it's at work, because my work situation, I'm a producer, so events are always crazy, but that's to be expected. It's just work, you know. But just as far as in my life, you know, I definitely can identify with Dave on that as well, because I gleaned a lot of my worth from work. You know, I was always working. Even when I was in high school, I was doing college classes towards TV production. So I was always ahead of the game in that regard. When I lost my scholarship, I started to work. You know, I started working in undergrad in my field. It got to the point where I just needed the degree to get a better job in my field. And that made me feel good, because everything else made me feel like crap, because everything else, you know, that I was trying to be in control of just kept going to shambles, and I just couldn't seem to get it together. There was a time where I felt like, where it says, where did it go?
Diane.
Yes.
It's 8 o'clock.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you both for sharing.
All right.
It is now time to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it did previously. Are there any AA-related announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Patrick,
welcome. Hi, Patrick.
Welcome. Welcome.
Literature is available on the table over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt fan provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, will you please help me thank David and Diane. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, Colonial and 22nd. Will someone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Yes.
Hey, Rob, my name's Travis. I'm not
Travis.
Hey, Travis.
Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day with a man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
We have a nice way of closing.
Thank you so much. Amy, can I say something real quick?
Yes.
For anybody, just real quick, anybody who doesn't know, Morgan's got a thing tomorrow. And we're going to go celebrate by eating shawarma tonight instead of the Mexican place. Mexican place is still a thing, but a bunch of us are going to shawarma, and you're all welcome.
Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed
be thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done,
on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread,
and forgive us our trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. That was wonderful. Thank you.